the month of September. Dr. Woody, how does that make you feel? A third over. I know. Isn't that something, though? Yeah. This is such a nice time as far as the weather goes. My favorite time.
Yeah,
it really
beautiful.
Is. The only bad thing is the days were shorter, you know, so much shorter. Like my attention span. I just read now, too, that the state of North Dakota, and I think even South Dakota in select counties, has enacted changes to, as far as transporting of game across state lines go. Deer in particular, where there's chronic wasting disease.
Oh, is that right?
You have to break them down into quarters and make sure that there's no head or spine or anything like that before you bring them in. And this year they plan to have... like conservation officers there to inspect, you know, the game that you bring across the state lines to try and prevent the spread of that terrible disease. Yeah. So,
well, in England, you know, they've cut way back on the cases. They were having thousands.
Oh, that mad cow stuff was scary, wasn't it?
Thousands and thousands of cases. And what they concluded was that in the process of slaughter in England, they pith these animals like they do a frog.
Yeah.
You run a metal rod into the neurologic tissue, and of course some of that squirts out and gets down on the meat, so they quit doing that. And when they quit doing that, things dropped off quite a bit. And then of course they banned the sale of brains and central nervous tissue.
And in England, fried brains for breakfast was a big deal. I could never get those.
Never excited me much.
No. Well, then they have, like, one of their favorite dishes, toad in a hole, which I don't know what it is, but I kind of like toast. I wanted to tell you, I caught a hummingbird yesterday.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I was out working in my daughter's car in the garage, and I heard a buzzing, and I'm looking around like, what the heck? He'd come into the door and was hovering up in the rafters, and I tried everything to get him out, but I couldn't. So I thought, well, he'll figure it out. But I was bent over, hunching away, working away, and then he was fluttering in the window, so I grabbed him.
Oh, my.
And they're not any bigger than a butterfly.
No,
and I brought him in the house and showed everybody.
Yeah.
He peep, like a little, like just a little peeping. And then I took him and let him go. And he shagged out of there like everything. But we have a lot of them hanging around.
Yeah,
and
good for you.
Yeah.
It's
just
beautiful to watch.
They really are. Beth won't let me have a parrot. I almost had her convinced to let me have a pet hummingbird, but she said no.
Well, actually, they're a whole lot more advanced model than a parrot.
You think so?
Well, they have such a high heart rate and they can hover. And their metabolism is just unbelievable.
And they won't bite your fingers off.
No.
So there is that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Went to the state fair last weekend with my little granddaughter, and it was fun to get to see through her eyes. Beth played out after we walked through the food court and had a couple of rides. She went back to the car and sat with the air conditioner turned on. But we toughed it out and slogged through all the wildlife exhibits, and that was so much fun.
Yeah, yeah.
But... like, well, I want a bunny now, and I want a kitty, and I want these things. And actually, that's one of our questions, and we'll get to that here in just a moment. Want to thank our listeners for letting us know where their interests and concerns are as far as pets go and their care. Before we begin, Dr. Woody, anything that you'd like to, any warnings you'd like to issue or reminders?
Well, there are plenty of skunks floating around out there. Seems like a new one every day.
Yeah.
You smell them all the time, so make sure everybody's protected.
Yeah, that's good advice indeed. I had a vulture flying around, too. I don't know, I'm not paranoid, but every time I go outside, I look up and there's a vulture, even in town. So they have a keen sense of smell, don't they?
They do.
So
tremendous.
Maybe they know something I don't.
Well,
I'm starting to worry.
As long as it's not over your head, you're okay.
All right. Dr. Woody, I'm wondering, how long are kennel cough vaccinations good for?
Well, that's a good question. In our kennel, we insist on them every 6 months. And the reason for that is we have a lot of field trial and hunt test dogs that are in there. And these animals have been maybe 20, 30 places in the last 2 months with 200 to 400 dogs at each place. They get a lot of exposure. And the kennel cough vaccine has been one of the, I don't want to say poorly performing, but lesser performing vaccines that we've had in the last few years.
What is kennel cough? Is it a bacteria or a virus?
It's a bug called Bordetella, bronchoseptica, and it's a upper respiratory thing. And you get it, and the dog coughs for 2 weeks or 10 days. Problem is you can get secondary bacterial infections like red nose in cattle. You know, you get the red nose, and then you get the Bordetella, or the Pasteurella Bordetella, whatever it is.
Is this the kennel cough not fatal, but it can open the gateway to something
more serious diseases,
okay.
Yeah, so we do it every 6 months, and it's just a convention. Some places do it every year. Some places don't do it at all.
If I were to have you board my dog every year, would he require a fresh kennel cough vaccination each time that he's boarded?
Only within the last 6 months, it's got to be.
Okay.
It's good for 6 months.
Oh, I see. Okay. And then the efficacy of it wears off?
We're not convinced that it's all that efficacious after 6 months, so that's why we do that.
I gotcha. Better safe than sorry.
People complain about it, and they, well, I want a 3-year this, and I want a 10-year that, and all that, but we just can't get along without it.
Yeah. I could imagine. And, of course, in a close proximity like that, when you've got dogs mm-hmm. that are sneezing and mm-hmm. coughing, it wouldn't take very long to transmit, and then they snip each other.
One of the most focal episodes of that I remember when I was a kid. I was at the Illinois State Fair, and I think they had 42 horses in this barn. It's a harness track, and there was a couple $100,000 prize at stake. None of them could race. They all had an upper respiratory complex, and they said it was a flu, a virus and a flu, but it always struck me.
You know, that it was that contagious.
Well, you get a bunch of stressed animals. You know, they've been racing all summer here and there. This would be in August. And they all come in one place, common air source, rebreather
sure.
everybody else's
right.
air. And I always think of that when I think of kennel cough.
There's a lot of people who are paranoid when they take commercial air flights because mm-hmm. you're breathing the same air.
Yep.
And, you know, some people will take airborne and yep. zinc and all these other
yep.
things. You know, and it doesn't seem like there's any help. If you're going to get it, you're going to get it.
Well, it's like that plane they stopped and everybody had flu this last week.
Yep. Yep. So as far as being contagious goes, there's a reason why they have these policies in place for vaccinations mm-hmm. and inoculations.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. I was wondering, Dr. Woody, if we need to worry about salmonella showing up in pet foods or pet treats, and if we need to worry about that, just how prevalent is that?
It's not terribly common. Unfortunately, when it does happen, and it does happen, it tends to be fairly serious. A lot of times you get animals that'll get an infection and die. I read a piece once upon a time that said that 20% of all eggs are contaminated with salmonella.
I think I read that too.
And I can't imagine that. I can't imagine why more people don't get sick if that's the case. But at least in my mind, what's happening as we go further down the road, we're either having less ingredient control or we're having poorer inspection or poorer rates of inspection, so more of this stuff gets through. Hardly a week goes by somebody isn't cracking off 10 million pounds of ground beef for some coliform salmonella, whatever it is.
Yeah, you're right about that.
And when I was a kid, we never used to do that at all.
Why do you suppose that is? Lack of quality control? The chasing a profit margin?
That's part of it. Part of it is the USD has cut way back on their inspection and their inspectors, you know, and so, and everything is so fast now. You know, scald times for poultry are real short. The people I know that work for them say that they'll show you this big pen of cattle, and they want you to look at them, and then they open the gate. You can see about 5 or 10 of them, and the rest of them are gone to the next place. You know, and it's just not like it used to be in terms of inspection. But as the world gets smaller and we get more and more ingredients from global sources to use in our foods and pet foods and treats, that's more of a risk.
And that's a concern to me, not just for the pets. You know, you think about some of the chew toys and things that come out of places like China where they, and even for humans, they have, you must admit, pretty lowered standards far as inspection goes.
Question.
And I worry about, you know, as you said before, one global market now, we have fruits and seafoods coming in from, the countries they come from, utilize different inspection parameters than what we might be a little stricter here than they are in Mexico.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I saw this thing out of South America, and, you know, a lot of those countries are trying to raise themselves up from third world country status. They were raising tilapia fish in sewage lagoons.
Yeah.
And these guys were just filleting those things as fast as anything could go, and the water that they came out of. I mean, how could you ever rinse that out?
Well, our standards are different than anybody else's standards, and people criticize it and they complain about it. But you have to admit that for as many people as we feed and as many products as we raise and sell and consume, we do pretty well.
I do have a problem, though, that a lot of times, for example, France, our European trading partners, they will impose certain regulations that's protectionistic against our products that are coming in. There really isn't anything wrong, but they say, oh, no, you've used GMOs and things like that.
Yeah, no growth hormones, none of that.
And I argue with people about that. It's like, no, I understand what you're saying, this whole Gwyneth Paltrow philosophy of things, but your science is faulty. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at Mother Nature, the chaos theory, there's always a throwback where there's a mutant, always.
Yep.
And so if they're able to insert genes and manipulate the genetic material to come up with a tomato that doesn't get blighted or something like that, that doesn't mean you're going to get cancer or cause autism from eating it, does it?
Not necessarily.
No. But
not necessarily.
You can... I don't know. I've given up. I just, you know, you're never going to, Frank Zappa said that. He said, you'll never convince anyone of anything if their mind is made up. And I think that's probably true.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Even if sometimes if people present the evidence to you, it's like, oh, well, you know, that's skewed one way or the other. So, but that's my 2 cents worth today. You know, Dr. Woody, we just got a brand new puppy. And when I hold her, I can feel her little heart rate starts to speed up really, really fast. What should the heart rate of a puppy be?
Depends a little on the breed. You know, we were talking about hummingbirds. They run 130, 150. Get excited.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Puppies, 80, 90 is not uncommon. Depending on if they're excited, how big a breed they are.
So a small dog, will their heart be faster than a big dog?
Tends to.
It does?
Tends to.
I think we should try and find some way to incorporate like a tortoise heartbeat into a dog because they had a great big like a box shell tortoise at the State Fair in Huron and that was so much fun to go back into the petting zoo. So and talk about a racket. For $1 they'd sell you a shot glass full of wheat. And then for like $5, you got a styrofoam cup full. Oh. Well, there's like 800 of those in a bushel of wheat.
Yeah.
But all the animals they had were so fat and bloated that they didn't want any more.
Yeah.
And they were just laying down there digesting. The only thing that was really active was this tortoise, and he wanted to get out. And he was kind of fascinating to watch.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I remember you saying that tortoises a lot of times will host salmonella. So we made sure that we used plenty of hand sanitizer.
Good for you.
My granddaughter wants a pet rabbit, and I can relate to this, Dr. Woody. Are they inside pets, or would they strictly be an outside pet?
Well, an outside bunny without a cage is not very long for this world. But we have a lot of people that have them inside. They're trainable to a litter box. They're reasonably unobtrusive. They're a lot of company. They shed a lot most of
the
time. They
do. Yeah. It's that real fine fur, too.
Yeah, yeah, real. But most of the people that we deal with have them inside as pets.
They sure are cute, though.
Yeah.
Those lop-eared things.
And
then there's some that were the size of big dogs over there. I couldn't believe
it. It's amazing
it.
How they get.
It really is. I actually, you know, I work with a young lady who was going to veterinarian school. She was getting her pre-stuff out of the way. And she loved animals, you know, came off a farm. They wouldn't let her have dogs or cats where she lived. But she smuggled in a rabbit. She said, if they catch me, they'll probably kick me out. But he doesn't bark.
Yeah.
And he was litter box trained. And she said, he likes to cuddle in my lap at night, so I have something to pet.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
You know, good for her, I say.
You bet.
My cat is quite large, Dr. Woody, and needs to go on some kind of weight loss program. How much weight should my cat lose in a month, and how can I go about helping her lose it and then maintain her newfound weight?
Well, it depends a lot on how much the cat weighs, and some of these cats are just big cats to start with. They're big frame cats, particularly Maine Coon cats and that kind of thing.
Maine Coon cats?
Yeah, they're about 3 California rag dolls. They're just tremendously long and big animals. So you have to kind of evaluate how much fat and how much structure is there. And then there's percentages. You know, they talk 5% every 2 months. I mean,
of a weight loss?
Yeah, there's all kinds of ways of figuring that out. My thought is that you're the best judge of your cat's situation because you see it all the time.
Sure.
And as far as how to go about it, the foods that people use for that, the diet foods, are real high fiber foods. So they have calories, but they're not digestible. So the cat eats it, and then he's hungry, you know. But there are all kinds of ways to incorporate diet and exercise. Get a laser mouse. Play with that rascal.
Adopt a bulldog because he'll chase the cat around.
But most people approach it with the diet, and you just have to get a lower-calorie diet that's not so...
Well, think about yourself as a person trying to lose weight. You have to re-educate yourself, and, you know, we at least have a logic to push yourself away mm-hmm. and say, I should only eat so much. But, right. but an animal is an opportunist, and as long as the food's there, they're going to gorge on it. So
and if they're inside, it's a limited number of things to do.
We just had a call, caller, and Aaron ran a question up to us. Dr. Woody, I'll put it to you right now. I want to thank you for that call. And this caller wanted to know, what can you do to get rid of bats?
The biggest deal with bats is to seal up your house. They say a hole the size of a quarter will allow a bat to come in.
Wow.
And it's one of those things. Basically, it's on a case-by-case deal in terms of if you already have them in the house. But you have to seal off where they're coming in. That's the biggest thing. And, you know, you wake up and there's one in the bathtub or one flitting around, whatever.
Don't touch it.
Don't touch it. Get a net or something or a towel and cover it up and take it outside, whatever you can. But don't monkey around with it.
So I've seen these things. They're... they emit a high-pitched squeak that's supposed an ultrasonic bat chaser outer or whatever. I don't know whether they work. I kind of doubt it.
Well, remember years ago they had the propane cannons for coyotes.
Yeah.
About 2 days they're used to them.
And, they used those mosquito magnets, too, to generate CO2. Mm-hmm. And they thought, well, if you put one of these in your yard, eventually, you know, you'll get rid of all the mosquitoes. But you didn't because...
No.
From outside your yard, they came in clouds.
They just came rolling in. Yeah. There was a guy I saw the other day that had a zapper, and he had a 2-liter bottle of club soda. And he just cracked the bottle, so the carbon dioxide was released, which attracted
the mosquitoes. Oh, that's smart. That's really pretty smart, isn't it?
Yeah, but like you say, you come from all over the town.
Yeah. Well, you know... Sadly to say, Dr. Woody, watching a zapper is probably better than some of the things they have on TV. No, we should actually have our very own cable TV network where tonight we feature Junebug zapping. Make sure you're listening in, right? We'll sell advertising. Dr. Woody, I have noticed on my 4-year-old dog that she's got red, dry, kind of scabby skin on her tummy, and it's just recently showed up the last couple of weeks, and if I itch it, it smells, it stinks. What do you think it is?
Well, the part that smells and stinks is some kind of an infection. The red and scabby part could be a lot of different things. Could be an allergy. It could be more the infection. It could be different things. But you probably ought to consider some antibacterials and then see if you can figure out what's the cause.
How about if a dog runs through the patch of, like, sumac or poison ivy? Will they also have the same result as a human will?
They tend not to be so susceptible.
Isn't really?
They are susceptible to other things. You know, every spring there's a epidemic of a rash on the abdomen of a dog where it's a red circle, it's pale in the middle, and everybody says, oh, it's a ringworm. And it's an allergy to a pollen in a grass that grows at that time of year. I think one week we counted 32 calls.
Did you really?
You know, it's the same thing.
Sure.
And it goes away no matter what you do.
Speaking of ringworm, is there any way to get rid of that?
Yeah, the ringworm is a fungus, and it creates a spore, just how it reproduces. And you have to address both of those things. The fungus, you can use an antifungal systemically, a tablet. Sometimes you have to use it for 6 to 12 weeks.
Oh, wow.
The spore is another thing. The environment gets contaminated, and you have to get the spore out of the environment. Iodine is a fairly effective ingredient against spores. Thiobenazole works pretty well. There's several drugs. But I've got one person now that's just having a terrible time trying to get it out of the house. He lent somebody a puppy to go out to the farm, and then of course it got into ringworm and came back and infested the whole bunch.
Oh man.
So it's iodine baths to try to get rid of the spores.
Oh dear.
Systemic antifungals. It's the environment.
It's like having anthrax in your house almost,
oh,
isn't it?
Yeah.
We have another call from one of our listeners. Oh, I thank you again for that. 692-1430 is the number. We have Aaron standing by. She'll take your call. They ask, Dr. Woody, how dangerous for cats it is to get into lawn chemicals like Roundup or other, you know, lawn-related chemicals.
Cats are exquisitely sensitive to organophosphates of all kinds. In fact, they say that you can have a, you know, the old workbench that everybody had at the barn on the farm. If you spill an organophosphate on that and it dries, the cat can walk through it, get enough on the pads of the feet, right through the pads, to make it sick.
Wow.
So I always encourage people to store your organophosphates far away from where the cat can get them.
Boy, oh boy, they're that susceptible. Yeah. Are dogs equally susceptible to that?
No, they're not. They're not by several orders of magnitude, but they do get, you know, involved with it. I mean, the neighbor's spraying the fence line, and the dog's out taking a leak, and it drifts, or he gets in where he's sprayed, and he starts chewing on the grass or the weeds. And
I remember worrying about that living in town when the cities would spray for mosquitoes. You know, people who have dogs out in their kennels that spend the night, and depending on the wind drift, or when they tell you that you shouldn't have clothes hanging on the line, you think, well, my dog's out there.
Yeah.
We were so dumb as kids that when Leroy Good would come through town with that little Ford tractor spraying for mosquitoes, we'd ride our bicycles through the fog and think it was fun. Then it was DDT.
Yipe. Didn't have any mosquitoes, did you?
Well, I had another arm grow out of my back so I could slap more mosquitoes. But, yeah, I'm sure I'll probably pay the price for that when I get to be a little older. We set out some rat poison in our back shed, Dr. Woody, trying to get rid of some rats out there. Normally, we don't allow the dogs into that particular shed. But the other day, they snuck in when the door was left open, and I'm afraid they may have eaten some of the rat poison. What would the symptoms be, and what can I do?
Well, rat bait is a kind of a tragic story. The active ingredient in a lot of rat bait still is an anticoagulant, warfarin it's called. And they use it for people that have the
like
blood
strokes,
is too thick
they?
And
yeah.
all of that. But 80-some percent of Norway rats are resistant to warfarin. So you're only working on 20% of the crowd out there with that stuff. And dogs and cats are tremendously susceptible to it. It causes hemorrhage under the skin. And the classic is the dog will be dumpy and lying around and they can't figure out why he's sick. And you brush the hair back and look at the skin. Looks like somebody hit him with a baseball bat. It just bruises. It's broken
like
blood
black
vessels.
Like black and blue marks, kind of?
Just broken blood vessels
oh, really?
Under the skin. So then it comes out as almost like a bruise. And these animals commonly don't survive very well.
Do they leak like that on the inside also from
Absolutely.
Their organs? They do.
Yeah, and that's the problem.
Wow.
And the antidote for it is vitamin K, but you
Oh,
have
the clotting
to,
agent?
You have to have an idea that they've been exposed and have a problem already.
Well, maybe they should just buy... Although I noticed cats really aren't all that good for rat control, are they?
Depends on the cat. The best thing for rat control is a snake, as far as I'm concerned.
Or carrier, maybe.
They get where cats can't get. There is also a rat bait out there that's vitamin D, and that's all that's in it. There's no warfarin. And I always encourage people to investigate that if you're going to bait for rats. The idea is that the rat takes in the vitamin D, and the vitamin D mobilizes enough calcium that the heart fails. It irritates the heart muscle enough that the heart stops. And I always thought that's a whole lot better solution. And dogs will get into that once in a while, but it's not nearly as big a deal as warfarin.
I read on the Mother Earth News about people, you know, and that's homeopathic kind of things, but they would mix powdered cement in with a little flour and some oatmeal and put it out. And the rats would eat it, and it would solidify in their stomachs, and then that would take care of them. When I was a kid, though, they used to sell this kind of stuff. It was liquid that you'd set out. It wasn't supposed to be poisonous to anything else, but if a rat would ingest it, it was like carbon dioxide. It would bubble, and they would blow it up, and that would kill them, I guess.
Yeah, but rupture an organ, maybe.
I don't know if that's true or not. You know, you hear so many things.
Yeah.
More than likely, you've got a bunch of rats now that are all hopped up on Coca-Cola, you know. So, Our cat has been rubbing up against her scratching post constantly, Dr. Woody, to the point that the spot that she does is almost bare and coated with hair. Now, why would he do that, and what should I do to prevent this behavior?
I would suspect there's some focal point there that's causing the cat to itch. It might be an abscess coming up. It might be a foreign body stuck in there. And I'd get him down and look at him real closely where he's rubbing it and see if there isn't some kind of an irritant that's making that happen.
Have you noticed with cats when they fight and they scrap, a lot of times, I don't know if it's a bite or if it's a scratch, but the skin heals over and then they'll like grow this really nasty abscess. Mm-hmm. And you'll be petting this cat and all of a sudden, here's this horrible green discharge. Something like that, maybe?
It's possible. The problem with a cat bite is that the tooth is such a uniform diameter. You know, a dog has a generally wider tooth at the base than at the point. Mm-hmm. And when they bite you, it's more of a wider wound and a tear. But the cat has such a uniform diameter, that tooth, that the skin seals over very readily. And it traps whatever the tooth stuck underneath the skin. And that's, I think, part of the reason why they abscess so badly.
It's like a dagger almost.
Mm-hmm. Like a pin or something sharp.
Well, we hear about, you know, the cat scratch fever. Uh-huh. Is there really such a thing or not?
Oh, yeah.
Is it only in certain people who are susceptible to it?
Actually, I had a client 2 weeks ago that ended up with a staph from a cat. My favorite story about that is out in Boston, there's a place called Henry Berg Memorial Hospital. It's an animal clinic, and they run... It's probably a million a year caseload now.
Goodness gracious.
Really
isn't
place.
That something?
Well, you could get an internship there and you could go for 6 months or a year and get 15 or 20 years worth of experience.
Sure.
But there was a guy out there, in those days we weren't politically correct. He was just a drunk and he was hanging around in the back alley, but he liked cats.
Well,
you
okay?
So he'd get to play with the cat and pet him, you know, and all that. Of course, cats scratch him and bite him. Showed up one day, his arm was about as big around as a basketball and turning black and all of this stuff, you know. And he, what the heck happened to you? Turned out he had cat scratch fever, but of course he had a seriously impaired liver and an immune system that was not nearly up to snuff. So if you have an individual who has diminished immune capacity, bad liver function, they are most certainly at risk for a cat scratch fever.
Would you recommend a pregnant woman to be in close contact with a house cat?
Not particularly, no. The caution with pregnant women and house cats is toxoplasmosis, mm-hmm. which is a parasite. And it's a thing that is transmitted with cysts in the prey that cats eat outside. It's transmitted to people through the fecal material. So if you're pregnant and you're out digging in your flower garden without gloves, you're at risk. If you eat raw meat and you're pregnant, you're at risk because of those cysts that might be there. And if you empty the kitty box, there's a risk. You should get somebody to empty the kitty box for you, and you should do it every day.
Every day.
The cutoff is supposed to be 48 hours, but I prefer to be on the side of caution and do it every day.
When you say 48 hours, after that amount of time, then the risk is lessened from contracting?
No, it's supposed to be more developed at that point.
Oh, I see what you mean.
So if you dump it before 48 hours, then it's not theoretically developed. But I'm never smart enough to know how far along they are when they come out.
Yeah.
So I figure every day is a safe way. And then they say, get somebody else to empty it for you.
So, you know, we're not saying that you should get rid of your beloved family cat. If someone in the family is pregnant, just make sure that you can use that as an excuse to not dump the dish, not dump the kitty litter box, or do dishes, or take out the garbage, vacuum.
Yeah.
Play it for all it's worth. You know, I know that the cooler weather causes arthritis in dogs to act up. Now, how do I know if my dog actually does have arthritis?
The biggest tip off I have is when the dog gets up from sleeping, it'll be real stiff and sometimes stumbly. And it'll kind of wobble around and squirrel around, and after a while it kind of shakes it off and goes on. And that's, to me, the first sign of an arthritis of the hip or the back. And if you see that, you probably have a dog, particularly if he's over 6 or 7 years old, that's working on an arthritic situation.
Do all animals, all dogs, will say, contract arthritis? Are there some that go through their whole lives and they're pretty nimble and spry?
Some are. I would say the bulk of them do, and I think it depends somewhat on breed. Depends on how hard you work in your life. If you're a working dog, it's different. And it depends on previous injury. You get a dog that's hit by a car, he's going to guaranteed have arthritis at some point.
Boy, we covered a pretty wide gamut of questions today. We want to thank our listeners for calling them in. And also want to let folks know, Dr. Woody, that if they want to check out your up-and-running website, they can. I mean, golly, you've got archive programs, all kinds of great information. How can they find it?
It's BrookingsAnimalClinic.com.
Log on and check it out. Sure. If folks want to call and talk to you personally, they can do that as well. Yeah. How can they reach you?
It's 692-2815.
I never can remember where you're located at.
420 12th Street South.
I just said that. I know where you are. Dr. Woody, it's a pleasure as always. Thank you,
Bob.
So much. Take care. We'll
see
talk to you again in a couple of weeks, okay?